This is Boston Public Radio. I'm Emily Rooney here in the studio with Callie Crossley. Big, big news day today, of course, Callie. Later this afternoon, John Kerry is going to be named to the nomination of Secretary of State. We'll be carrying that press conference live. We just listened to Wayne LaPierre, the executive director of the National Rifle Association, his proposal that all schools have an armed guard of some form or other outside, that volunteers and retired people from the military take up those posts so it wouldn't cost the school systems or educational systems any money at all. And we're taking your calls here today.
We're at 877-301-8970. I'm Callie Crossley. Wayne LaPierre, who, as Emily just indicated, is the head of the NRA, says what he wants with this armed guard situation in each school is a cordon of protection. Those are his words. And he said earlier in the press conference, as he was explaining why this was needed, we as a society leave them, meaning the children, utterly defenseless, and the monsters know it and exploit it. This is why armed security needs to be in every school. He's asking Congress to move on some piece of legislation that would make it possible to institute what he's calling a national school shield model so that every school in January would have an armed guard.
Okay, and we're getting your reactions to that. We're going to go to Dan from Providence. Go ahead, Dan.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
I grew up in Israel, actually, and in Israel, every single school from elementary up has a security guard up front that is armed for the reason of protecting the kids, and no terrorist acts ever occurred inside of a school. And there is proof behind his words, so guns inside of schools may not be a bad thing.
So you support that? Are you an an NRA member yourself?
I'm not. I'm a gun owner, but not an NRA member by choice.
Is there a difference in your mind between having teachers armed, as some have suggested, or the plan that LaPierre is talking about, which would involve training some retired reservists or military folks?
First of all, there's a ton of folks coming to get work from Iraq, Afghanistan. It'd be a great employment opportunity for them, for the U.S. economy, as well as somebody experienced rather than teaching teachers how to handle guns rather than how to teach students.
Okay, Dan, you're breaking up a little bit, but thanks for the call. We're going to go to AJ in Brookline.
Yes, well, anyway, I think the net result of Pierre's discussion is to realize that the term gun control is a meaningless slogan. If you recall, he began at the outset to talk about there's no way of getting a list of people that are mentally likely to do these kinds of things. And once you're not able to get that information, then the idea of gun control simply does not make sense. Now, if you look at his plan...
If I could interrupt you, actually what he said was the nation had refused to put together a national database of mentally challenged folks.
Right. This would be violating civil liberties, civil rights, of course. I mean, each jurisdiction will not do that. Namely, the mental folks are not going to allow this to happen because they only have a small percentage, tiny percentage. But the thing, the value of his proposal of arming is not so much the technical details of who's going to do it, but the fact that everyone will be aware that there will be armed personnel at the schools, okay? The same way that we know there will be an officer will come to help you out. And that in itself, I believe, will, deflect, will diminish any kind of that type of stuff, just to know there is this preparedness at the schools, regardless of the details of the plan.
All right. That's interesting. We're getting a lot of people who support this proposal by the NRA. Thank you, AJ. We're going to go to Jesse from Gloucester. Go ahead, Jesse.
Hi. I just want to start off. I don't think it's a necessarily bad idea at this point with having schools armed, but I also kind of feel it's more a Band-Aid to the bigger problem, and the bigger problem being that this generation, my generation, I'm 22 years old, my generation is just completely, I mean, death is just now something that it's whatever. You kill everybody in video games, people are getting killed every day, out in, I mean, out in the streets, I mean, what difference does it make to them to kill more? Or, I mean, when they get thrown off the edge like this kid.
Do you agree with Wayne LaPierre that the media is largely responsible for this? They're promoting violence, not only by focusing on tragedies like what happened in Newtown, but also through promotion of video games, violent TV shows like Criminal Minds, CSI, those kinds of things.
It's completely demoralized right now. Everything you hear is violent. Everything. So now all these kids growing up are all seeing all this violent stuff their whole life, and it's normal. We're acting like a third world country at this point. It's getting to that point. And then it gets to the point where people want to take guns away. But why? What happens if you take guns away? They're going to make bombs. Someone's going to kill someone if they want to kill someone. And it's shown throughout history that that's what will happen. You go to prisons. Prisons don't have any weapons of any kind. People are still getting stabbed in jail. They're still making them. They're finding ways. It doesn't matter. You can take away anything, and someone will find another way to do it. When there's a demand, and this demand is killing, someone will find a way to do it. Do we need assault weapons necessarily in our homes? I don't think so. I'm not opposed to anybody owning them, but do we need them? It would be a compromise I'd be willing to make to be able to keep our rights.
All right. Thanks for the call. Thanks for the call, Jesse. This is interesting, Kelly. A lot of people are in support of this.
Yeah. In Massachusetts, I'm actually a little bit surprised.
Well, a lot of these calls are from Rhode Island, which is also interesting.
Well, so we have gun owners, and we had some people who were NRA members, but others who were not, who believe that this is the way to go. We're at 877-301-8970. I'm Callie Crossley here with Emily Rooney. We are taking your calls, responding to Wayne LaPierre, Executive Vice President of the NRA's proposal to arm all schools.
All right. And we've got John, from Cranston, Rhode Island. Go ahead, John.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
I actually am a gun owner, NRA member. And the reason I actually purchased the gun was actually to harm myself. So when I purchased the gun, I found it odd there was never any investigation into my mental health whatsoever. My capabilities to handle a gun, what I would do with a gun, nothing. It was just simply, you went in, you signed the paperwork, you waited a week, you got the gun. There was no investigation as to where I was mentally.
So what was the week was to do a background check? What was the week for?
I'm sorry, what was
that?
Why
did you have to wait a week if they weren't doing a background check on you? What did they do?
I'm not sure what they did, actually. They just said I had to wait a week to purchase the gun.
But they didn't do any kind of a psychological or a...
No, not at all. And it frightens me because most of these shootings are done by people who are not mentally stable. Mm-hmm. And not to get off the subject, but our mental health system stinks, basically. But the fact is that I have a psychological problem. I'm no harm to anybody else. Any harm that I would do to myself. But
what is your psychological problem?
I have suicidal tendencies.
And you're a gun owner.
Yes.
Does that make you nervous?
Yes, it does. Because the reason I bring this up is because about a month ago I was admitted to the hospital. Because every night before I went to bed, I'd have the gun sitting on the bedstand next to me with the thought of doing something. And fortunately, I had the presence of mind to seek out help. So they had me committed. But so I'm on, 50 million drugs or whatever.
But they did not take your gun away.
No, they ultimately wouldn't let me out of the hospital until somebody took the gun away.
I see. Hmm. Are you glad they did? Or...
Yeah, I am. I am glad they did. Like I said, I'm in no danger to anybody else, but it did frighten me because there is a release to the fact that you could do yourself in and then you can get rid of all your problems or whatever. But I just find it appalling that anybody with any psychological problem can go in and purchase a gun. And the fact that the NRA says we have trained professionals, you know what? Just simply because you own a gun doesn't mean you're a trained professional. And that's the assumption that I think the NRA is trying to make.
All right. John, thanks for the call.
Yeah.
That is an interesting assumption, Kelly, that anybody who was retired from the military or had had some weapons training would somehow be an expert and therefore qualified to be one of these armed guards at a school.
Yeah, he didn't drill down into the details of exactly who might be considered for his National School Shield model. But some of our callers have suggested, some of the young men coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan could use some employment. But we also know that 40% of those coming back have suffered from PTSD symptoms. So that might not be the best situation for them. So at least in his statement, he talked about active retired reserves and military. I don't know how they would make a determination of who'd be fit to do this work.
It would be tough. All right, we're going to go to Kathleen from Providence, Rhode Island. Go ahead, Kathleen.
Hi, thanks so much for taking my call. I am a veteran. I'd like to start off by saying that, but I'm also liberal, so I'm kind of on this, in a weird side of the spectrum. But if we're going to talk about the subjunctive about, you know, what if there were armed guards at Sandy Hook, there would almost certainly have been a shootout in that situation. Or maybe it would have prevented something. I don't know. I can't speak to that. But if Nancy Lanza had never owned assault weapons in the first place, Adam Lanza probably would not have gone somewhere else to get those. I think that's a compromise that a lot of gun owners would be willing to make, is a common sense ban on assault weapons. There's no reason for civilians to have them. And
did you say he would?
He
wouldn't have gone somewhere else to get them.
I believe that he would have. That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Well, that we won't.
Yeah, know. The shootout part of it is what gives a lot of people pause. Earlier this week, Richard Land, who is head of a large evangelical group here in the United States, suggested that teachers should have been armed at Sandy Hook. And that got a lot of pushback. He gave that interview to the folks at All Things Considered. And so that's why I keep asking the question when people say arming is good, whether they mean arming teachers or do they mean someone else.
There was that congressman from Texas, Gomer, I think his name is. He also suggested that the teachers should be armed,
exactly.
not that there would be an officer. And as I know, I said a few minutes ago, Fall River has decided to do that. They've not arming the teachers, but they have an armed police officer at every school in the city right now. So we're going to take one more call here. Peter from Cape Cod. Go ahead, Peter.
Oh, thank you, Emily, for taking my call. I'm calling as a person who also is a gun owner, and I'm wholeheartedly in favor of a ban on assault weapons and those types of weapons. I don't think they need to be used for protection. I have a single pistol in my home, and it was actually my wife's suggestion that we get it after that unfortunate mother and daughter were attacked up in New Hampshire years ago, and my wife wasn't feeling safe, and she said, I think I'd just be safer when you're away for business or for the weekend that I have something in the house.
Those people were stabbed.
They were stabbed, that's right. So if the mother had a little bit of warning, a little bit of time, and she had a pistol in the
house.
They
jumped both of them in bed. The mother was in bed. I mean, you know, you're not going to have time to reach under your bed and get a gun.
Well, she didn't have time to do it, but if she heard glass break or something like that, we just thought that someone could be safer if you're upstairs in your home and you hear people downstairs, that you just are upstairs and you have some mode of protection for yourself. If you don't have any mode of protection at all, they can just come waltzing up the stairs and have their way. If you have some protection, you can stand on the landing and say, please don't come up those stairs. You do have at least some mode of protection unless they get you while you're still sleeping.
All right.
If you wake up, but that really wasn't the reason for my call. I wanted to say that I do agree that there should be a ban on assault weapons and those types of weapons. And I also wanted to agree that if someone in that school, I understand there is a question of whether, of course you don't want a shootout in a school, but if some responsible adult, a teacher who'd been there for 20 years, that unfortunate principal who had been there, that was one of the first people, as I heard it, that was able to confront that or did confront that shooter, and unfortunately, she was killed. But if she had had a weapon and was able to get a round off at that guy, maybe the whole thing could have been averted. And it just makes sense to me. I'm surprised that I think this way, but the more I think about it, it makes sense to me that someone if a teacher that's been there 20 years and everybody knows him and he's completely psychologically okay, he's got background checks, he's been trained by law enforcement, the principal has been trained by law enforcement, say two people in that school had a weapon, the entire incident could have been averted. And that was the reason for my call. It just makes sense to me. It seems clear-headed. You don't want to arm the schools, but these lunatics like Gerald Loeffner and this guy down in Newtown, they do get hold of guns, and they do have bad intentions.
Okay, Peter.
And thanks for the call.
We appreciate that. Because the only problem with that logic is that then the gun would be available to virtually anyone in the school, including another student. So we're going to be continuing this conversation up until 2 o'clock. I'm going to be joined here in the studio by a couple other people, and Callie Crosley is going to come back in a little bit later and continue that discussion. We've got so much other stuff going on in the news too today, Callie, as you know, with John Kerry.
Yeah, wow, that's going to be that opens up a whole other can of worms here in Massachusetts, so
get
we have
ready
to talk about that. So I'm Callie Crosley.
I'm Emily Rooney. You're listening to Boston Public Radio.
Washington, D.C. quarterback Robert Griffin III is called RG3 by fans. His standout play has some already calling him Rookie of the Year, but one sports commentator gave him a different handle. He called him a cornball brother, not really black. The Barbershop guys weigh in on just who does get to revoke your black card. Next time on Tell Me More.
This afternoon at 2, here on 89.7 WGBH.
WGBH programs exist because of you and the Museum of Science, where science and technology come into focus, offering the chance to think with hands-on, minds-on experiences. More information available online at mos.org. That's mos.org. And RSSI Home Care, delivering home care services to the elderly and disabled, including help with care management, homemaking, and personal care. RSSI helps maintain independent living with dignity. Info at rssihomecare.com.
This is Boston Public Radio. I'm Emily Rooney. It's been a wild and very busy news day today. Just a few minutes ago, we heard NRA CEO Wayne LaPierre in an unprecedented press conference. Actually, it was not a press conference. It was a statement. He was addressing gun violence and the tragedy that claimed 26 lives at Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, Connecticut, last Friday. Also this morning, House Speaker John Boehner said Congress will come back after Christmas to solve the year-end budget crunch. And we also learned this morning that John Kerry will be voted as the nominee for Secretary of State. And that, of course, is going to set off a whole other chain reaction right here in this state, as we've been speculating for quite some time. I'm joined here now in the studio by former Massachusetts State Treasurer Shannon O'Brien, State Senator Robert Hedlund, and Charlie Chipio from Chipio Strategies. First, just your reaction to Wayne LaPierre suggesting that the solution is to have armed officers, maybe retired people from the military or others, volunteers, so it wouldn't cost school systems or police departments any extra money, someone armed at every single school in America.
Well, I think the best thing I can say about it is that at least he said it would be voluntary. At least he said schools could turn it down. I'm not sure I necessarily want armed volunteers, who I wonder how well trained they're going to be at my kids' schools, and nor do I really relish the idea of, you know, in Newtown, I mean, it was unspeakable, but I'm not sure it's much better to have shootouts, you know, like it's the OK Corral at these schools. I don't think that's the answer.
Well, I don't have a positive reaction to that without having thought it through, but my initial reaction is one of discomfort. And I'd just love to see us get back, not to be too nostalgic, but, you know, to the concept of our neighborhood schools, where things were relaxed. You could there was no security back in our days. It was just a it was a haven, you know, for learning and for play. I go down to my neighborhood school still occasionally where I grew up. You know, you don't even see kids in the playground anymore. Parents are afraid to leave kids out engaged after school having activities because every tree there's a sex offender hiding behind it, or you know, they want to bar the doors because of these kinds of tragedies that happen. But I think we need to get serious and have kind of a discussion about the root cause of where this mindset comes from, and not just focus on guns.
You know, interestingly, Shannon, we were taking phone calls this past hour since about 11:30, and I'm going to say 80% of the people who called in were in support of what Wayne LaPierre was suggesting.
I'm surprised at that, but in one hand, but on the other hand, I'm not. I mean, I think that people are desperately looking for some way to get this sense of security, to get some sense of how you protect your children. Now, I disagree with his solution. I think that it's a much broader issue. I do think that we need to take a look at the safety and security in the schools. I mean, I was just, you know, I was listening to some program yesterday talking about the fact that Newton, you know, for the first time is actually probably going to have locked doors. You know, when I, as my daughter invariably does on a biweekly basis, forget something at school and I have to go into the...
Only biweekly?
Yeah, I know. She's pretty good, huh? You know, and I have to go into the middle school there. You have to get buzzed in, the double doors, the whole thing. You know, so certainly we need to...
So they're locked.
So they're locked. And I do think that, you know, that there are safety precautions, but I just don't understand. To me, this feels like a little bit of a Hail Mary pass that the NRA is getting a lot of heat from, you know, a lot of people across the country, obviously very emotional and very concerned about the weapons. But he never really addressed the issue that I think people are really looking at. And it's not just the guns, but it's the specific type of
guns. Yes, he never mentioned that.
He never mentioned that. And I think that when you've heard a lot of NRA members speak out in the past week about this, a lot of them who are NRA members have said, you know, these multiple, you know, these clips, these killer bullets, those are the types of things. Again, that's not going to stop all the problems, but it obviously does take a small step towards reducing some of the fatalities
and
in the future.
You know, that is the issue. I'm no expert on guns, but you know what? Just you don't need to be able to just go to Walmart and buy an assault rifle or a machine gun. I mean, the problem is way broader than guns, but certainly an assault weapons ban seems to me to be a pretty logical.
Excuse me. Don't forget the young kid who was at the gun show a couple of years ago, and I actually happened to the police chief who ran this show and was indicted. I actually went to Catholic went to Catholic grammar school with him. I was a friend of his, and you know, I always thought he was a pretty good guy. Obviously, it was a huge mistake, but a young kid under supervision, not much supervision, but shot himself, you know, with an automatic weapon like that. So they failed to address it. I think that they addressed something that a lot of people might react to emotionally, which is, yep, we have to do something desperate to protect our kids. We need to protect our kids. And so I think it's a silly proposal, but I'm not surprised by the response of parents who just want somebody out there protecting their kids,
you know,
and keeping them
safe.
It was
interesting. Before Wayne LaPierre got to any specifics about what his proposal was, he spent the first 15, 20 minutes of his statement essentially blaming the media and accusing the media of demonizing gun owners, of being ignorant when it comes to descriptions and confusing different types of weaponry, assault weapons and machine guns, using interchangeable names when the weapons are very specifically different. He was critical of the fact that the news media, that the media covers these killers, he said, gives too much, glorifies the killers. And he said that the media beyond that, video game industry, network television, you know, dramas like Criminal Minds and CSI, you know, glorify this type of, you know, criminal behavior.
Except I may not disagree with him about the video game stuff.
No, I absolutely.
Or some of these television shows.
Yeah.
He's not wrong.
I absolutely think there's some significant amount of validity to that. We have to have a discussion about the violent kind of culture that we're creating. And of course, a lot of politicians, it's easy to demonize the NRA and beat up on guns, don't want to talk about the violence emanating from Hollywood. And he has legitimate argument. when you confuse terminology and get into this discussion about guns. We've only been on the air here on this segment a few minutes, and we've done it already. I mean, with all due respect to Charlie, and he's a lot smarter guy than me on 99.9% of the topics out there, but to say you can walk into a Walmart or whatever it was you said and buy a machine gun is crazy. I mean, you can't. Machine guns are legal in this country, okay? But you have to take it to another level in terms of background checks. And there aren't these kinds of crimes being committed with machine guns. If I want to go buy a machine gun, I probably can go buy one. So they are legal. But I just can't walk into a Walmart and buy it. And at the same time, you use the word assault weapons. It's kind of a broad definition. There's a huge distinction about what an assault weapon really is versus the kinds of guns that we can actually buy and access, or most people can actually buy and access in this country. So you have to, you know, not take the Piers Morgan approach and throw these inflammatory language around and
own terminology. I certainly plead guilty to being ignorant of guns, but I would say two things. One is, you know, this weapon that was used was legal. In Connecticut, and I have no, you know, rifles, people, things for hunters, that's fine. We don't need regular people being able to buy these kind of weapons, I think is my point. And I agree that it is only one piece of the causation here. Many of the reasons I think we don't even yet understand really what's behind all this. But you know, I do think that's one piece on the gun side that we have to deal with. The other thing that I'm struck by LaPierre is the reality that it just, to me, points out just how polarized this country is. Mm-hmm. It is as if he is speaking a different language. He's coming from an entirely different culture than what we represent in what is absolutely an island here that is not representative of the country
as
a whole.
But back to the media thing for a minute, because he actually suggested that there was something conspiratorial on the part of the media when he pulled up that video game of killing kindergarten.
Oh, and said they never caught that. Yeah.
But I mean, there was some, you know, he was suggesting that not only did they not catch it, but if they had caught it, they wouldn't tell anyone about it because somehow they're protecting their own industry. That's how I heard it.
But I see that it rolls a lot of social issues into one big mess that when you take things apart, when we have a discussion about what is and is not an assault weapon, what is and is not, you know, how many killer bullets out there. I mean, it when you take them separately, I think we can have a rational discussion. But the problem is, and I'll tell you, Bob, I mean, I think you probably have a lot of, you know, hunting enthusiasts in your district. When I was a state representative, you know, I had a pretty good rating with the Gun Owners Action League out there. You know, I voted for an assault weapons ban, but I supported the rights of hunters. But so I think that the problem is when they turn it into this one big mush, like it's everything wrong with society that's creating this, as opposed to let's look at the bullets, let's look at the clips, let's look at, you know, how we do have ratings and rankings and access to these violent games, you know, for teenagers and kids. All of them, I think, can have a rational argument. But when you have people who really don't want to get to some of those more basic issues, it's much easier to kind of throw it all out there and create a smokescreen, if you will, and then there's really no opportunity to debate.
All right, I'm Emily Rooney. You're listening to Boston Public Radio. I'm joined here in the studio by former State Treasurer Shannon O'Brien, State Senator Robert Hedlund, and Charlie Chipio of Chipio Strategies. We're going to be right back after this. We're going to be talking about Senator John Kerry and the never-ending fiscal cliff debate. We'll be right back. This is Boston Public Radio. I'm Emily Rooney. Joining me here in the studio, Robert Hedlund, Charlie Chipio, and Shannon O'Brien. So we knew it was going to happen. We thought it was going to happen. Today it's happening, 3:30 this afternoon. There will be a formal press conference. Senator John Kerry will be the official nominee to Secretary of State, setting off a domino effect right here in Massachusetts. Many, many scenarios playing out that the governor will appoint somebody either short-term or long-term to finish the term out. They'd have to change the state law in order to do that. What's your best guess, Bob Hedlund?
My best guess on what?
what scenario is going to happen in terms of filling the seat temporarily?
Well, I mean, the governor will name someone to fill the seat temporarily. I have no idea. I can't read the governor's mind on who he will come up with. The big question will be, do you want a placeholder or you want someone that's going to – like the last time when he named Paul Kirk with the promise that he would not run. Is that going to happen again or is he going to name someone that is going to run and use that as a leg up in the primary to secure the nomination at the next election? So
and
that'll
he,
be the big
will
question.
Will he go for a change in the law to – finish out John Kerry's term with whoever he is.
I don't think the governor's going to push for a change in law. I think he would like a change in the law.
I think it's
but
right.
you have enough leadership now in the legislature that said, you know, we're not going to do that. I mean, to do that would be outrageous. Yeah. The ruling party has changed the rules twice now when it suited them. And in fact, it was a little irony, of course, those changes resulted in Scott Brown becoming the United States Senator. So you've already had the Senate president on record. You've had, I think, I know definitely the Senate chair of the Election Law Committee, and I think maybe the House chair. But they've been on record already saying, we're not going to do this again. So I think that's pretty ironclad guarantee that the legislature won't change the rules once again. So the big question will be who's the governor going to come up with?
I'm just sitting here waiting to see if Shannon O'Brien's going to take this opportunity to announce
today.
Her candidacy.
I'm announcing today. And in 30 minutes, I'll be announcing my divorce.
And maybe getting up announcing that.
Yeah,
who's going to get in, Shannon?
I mean, you know, obviously, you know, we're seeing Ted Kennedy Jr. and a number of his close friends have been, you know, pushing in the press. Certainly, we have some very credible congressional candidates who've thought about this for a long time, and none of them have ruled it out at this point in time. You know, you've seen some sort of dark horses. My good friend Dave Seamus, who's worked in the Obama administration, I think that someone like that sort of coming in from the outside, regardless of your ties to fundraisers, I think that's more difficult. But, you know, the bottom line is this is a very short window. I think, what is it, Bob? It's 140 to 160 days after the vacancy is created. So whomever runs needs to be able to quickly raise money. I think it's going to have to be someone who already has some name recognition.
You're talking about on the Democratic side.
On the Democratic side,
But the beauty of it,
because
too,
I think
is,
Scott Brown,
well, the
I mean,
beauty
is
of
in
it too
right
is,
right
you know,
now.
Assuming Ted Jr. doesn't get in, because he may clear some folks out of the way. But if you don't have that big name like his, big name in the
he's
eyes
not
of—
He's not that big a name
well,
in Massachusetts.
I have to say that. In my eyes, he's not. But you've got these Democrats out there that are brainwashed about this Kennedy mystique. We put Joe Kennedy in with no credentials, Joe Kennedy III. I don't get it. But you have to concede that point. So
but his name is Ted Kennedy.
Yeah. I know.
So I ran into him at a hotel about 2 weeks ago downtown, and I was struck and stunned. I don't know him at all, but somebody introduced him. How exactly – all the affectations right down to the kind of stuttering that is
I think he's I think he's a better speaker than his dad from what I've seen, and he's probably – considering some of the other Kennedy clan members of his generation, he may have more gravitas than many of them, too. But the point I was going to make was that you don't have delegate percentage thresholds at a convention to deal with. If you have a crowded field, someone's going to take a look at this. It could be a Western Mass-based guy saying, hey, if I can pull some votes in Western Mass because we've got all these candidates
from
the Eastern.
Trust me, it's not that big.
Well, I was thinking of Ben Downey. Yeah, whatever.
If that were the case, well, you'd be calling me something
buddy Ben
right
Downey
now,
has delusions of grandeur.
Okay,
and his name is out there. So the point is, you could have a crowded field. You don't have to give up a current seat that you may hold. Yep. So it's going to make for a lively kind of boiling pot.
And also the issue is, you know, you have three congressmen and the balance of power in the House. You know, normally you'd say, you know, maybe someone like Eddie Markey or, you know, Capuano or Lynch that, you know, that the governor, if indeed he was going to appoint a long-term person, but then you create that opening
that
there.
That would be crazy.
Know?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's certainly, not that this matters, but I think it's certainly in the best interest of democracy for him to appoint a caretaker, as he did with
Kirk. John Oliver, or how about Barney Frank?
Yeah, I was just surprised to see Frank interested in it because it seemed to me from the stuff
I would
read,
like him to be appointed for the sheer entertainment
value. Well, sure, but from the stuff I read, it seemed like he was basically chomping at the bit to finally be able to make some money.
Flattered.
And why would, you know, why would he want to put that off, you know? But I don't know. But, you know, I think that it's going to be very different because of the fact that it's such a short term. I mean, look, there are people on that are getting talked about who, if there was a longer period, people like Jay Gonzalez, Ben Downing, both of whom I think are really competent, you know, who might have a shot. But
Jay Gonzalez, by the way, is former
Secretary of Administration and Finance. But, you know, because it's so short, I think, Asana, you mentioned Ed Markey. I mean, I hear the word Ed Markey, and I just want to put my head down on the table and take a nap. I mean, you talk about somebody who's a yawn, has been around for a million years.
And he's the, you know, dean of the delegation.
But I think that's what you're going to get. You're going to get the Markeys. You're going to get
Michael Capuano. Possibly Stephen Lynch.
Lynch, you know.
And you might get some folks out of the business world, too, which is what happened the last couple times around. We had a number of businessmen seek the gubernatorial race.
Ill-suited. I mean, maybe Ortiz, you know. I mean, she's been in the
Carmen Ortiz.
Yeah.
I think that putting someone in that, someone who's going to run for this role needs to kind of understand quickly how to launch a campaign. I'm just not sure that someone who's been, you know, a prosecutor sort of understands
I agree.
A lot of that. I mean, I her name has been out there, but I think that that's, you know, that's wishful thinking. I think a longer term campaign for someone like a Ben or Ortiz or someone like that might be better. But a short term election, I don't think is easy.
I said nice things about Teddy Jr.
Didn't
I?
Yeah.
Okay. But at the same time, I get Kennedy fatigue. Please. Not two Kennedys in the delegation at the same time again.
I wonder about him.
Only plus, he's really got roots in Connecticut.
In Connecticut, and he actually, where he lives, is a couple towns over from where I grew up. So I'm down there a lot and everything. And he's got a really good reputation down there. He's very well liked, and he's very competent. Well, he's involved with the Special Olympics, but he works at an investment firm.
Manager.
He runs an investment firm.
He's one of the 1% that Elizabeth Warren has her eye on.
But my question is, you know. How much of a sort of blowback is there if he tries to walk in?
Do you want to know what I think is interesting?
None.
I don't know. One of the things that I thought was interesting. A lot of people, and Martha Coakley, you know, could certainly, I think, make a credible run again. A lot of people, you know, blame her campaign and everything. I think that the one thing that really hurt her more than anything was the question, you know, talking about this being the Kennedy seat. And I think that if Ted Kennedy Jr., you know, can make a credible argument about, you know, given that track record, working with the Special Olympics and things like that, you know, I think he can, he could be a credible candidate. But
she said absolutely not.
But I, you know,
I spoke to her last week.
Oh, okay. Well, I still think she's a pretty good candidate. Tell her, you know, but I think that someone like that, I mean, I think that someone like a Martha Coakley would be a good candidate. I actually do.
Well, we will know pretty soon, won't we? In fact, how does that work? What's the John Kerry will be named. That won't happen, though, before the end of the year, will it, Bob?
I mean, I have no idea. I mean, he'll have to submit his resignation to the Senate at some point.
Yeah.
The
confirmation hearings won't be until after the first.
Yeah, he's not going to resign until he's confirmed, I wouldn't think.
No.
And that's going
to I think you can take it to the bank that he's going to be confirmed.
Oh, sure.
There's absolutely no. I don't think you'll see
any serious opposition to that. He may resign before. You know what I mean? He may. And again, that may be part of the strategy, thinking about the special election and everything.
Okay, so between the horrible shooting in Newtown last week and all of our political speculation here, this fiscal cliff situation kind of fell off the fell off the radar screen in a lot of ways. And I guess I had this just assumption that this thing would be settled by last week. But now it looks like it's not going to be settled before.
This was unbelievable yesterday where Boehner goes with the plan B and he can't get the votes for it. I mean, to me, the worst thing that happened in this whole fiscal cliff was a year and a half ago. Because a year and a half ago, when they couldn't agree on the debt ceiling, there was deals on the table that would have been far better than anything they're going to come up with now. And I've said this before, I completely blame the Tea Party. These people are out of their minds. And we had deals on the table a year and a half ago where we could have gotten $5 in cuts in entitlement reforms for every dollar of new revenue. We would have a year and a half less of debt and interest for our great grandkids to pay, and we could have dealt with this. This is just a train wreck now because.
And every day you don't deal with it, it gets worse,
worse.
And makes it harder and
harder.
Exactly.
And I don't blame, I'm in the minority. I don't blame Boehner. I don't know how you deal with these people. You know?
Today I was watching Morning Joe. I watched that in the morning, and he was going completely berserk. You know,
yes.
I mean, as someone
report.
As someone who's a moderate Republican, you know, who I love his show because I do think it's one of the sort of truly, you know, bipartisan-ish shows, you know, that are on.
Mika's not bad either.
Okay, but he was going bonkers today talking about what these extremists within the Republican Party are doing to his Republican Party.
Oh, exactly.
And And he was screaming on TV today.
I don't blame him.
You know, so it's a little bit dangerous. It's going to be interesting to see what happens, because I don't blame Boehner. I do think that he has attempted to try to move this forward, but you can't lead if they don't come after you. It's like, what was it, Animal House? What was that thing? He's running and he's like, "Okay, we're going to go charge." And
but you have the same dynamic on the other side of the aisle with larger numbers of the Democrat caucus who don't want to do anything about spending. You know,
so oh, I mean
that's contributing to this gridlock too. And you know, this fiscal cliff talk, this is just a minor issue compared to the big picture, which is our national indebtedness.
Yes.
And if we can't attack this problem and just get this deficit under control and work towards some kind of a balanced budget, we're never going to address the national debt issue.
So, Bob,
which is the big looming major security threat that this nation
and
faces.
And I completely agree with that. I think the difference, though, is that a year and a half ago, you had Obama, who is the head of the party, who was actually willing to make a deal on this. And that's why I blame the Tea Party people.
You actually believe that?
Well, I only believe what the reports are, that, you know, you had $5 of cuts for $1 of new revenue on the table.
But where is that offer now? I mean, we don't see a serious
effort. Well, I think Obama now feels like he doesn't have to.
Well,
what happened is he won an election
right. Talking about raising taxes on the wealthy, and you got you did not get the votes to support something like that, even though I won't say there's an overwhelming mandate, but there is a mandate.
Right.
He was pilloried for this, and the American people voted for him. Saying exactly
but
what
the fact
he'd
is,
do.
You, the fact is
that
you're
he would preserve
you're,
and protect
you're not
spending
gonna get the
on
problem
some
under control without addressing the spending side of the equation, and, which right now, regardless of mandate or not and political posturing,
he
doesn't
has,
want
but
to
he
do.
But he has put spending cuts on the table. And the fact is, you know, I mean, I still think he's got to talk to, you know, certain, you know, more left wing parts of the Democratic Party. But the fact is, I think he has tried to put something on the table.
Okay, so wait, I have a basic question.
Sure.
They're talking about extending all the current tax rates now, maybe until August 1st. But doesn't sequestration and all of that, don't all these things automatically kick in January 31st, or can they put that off too?
I think that there is some sort of, again, I don't understand all of this, but there's some sort of safety valve where the leaders of the two branches, I think, have some sort of safety valve where they could push things off one more time. I don't think it'll happen.
I think the rule of thumb I've learned in these situations is that somehow they can basically do whatever they want.
Yeah.
Which is what happened last time. Yeah.
No, but in the interview with Boehner, they specifically asked him about some sort of safety valve, if you will, that they could, and he basically said absolutely not. So, I mean, again, who knows?
Well, the safety valve is he'll come up with another form of legislation to kick it down the road that they'll all agree
on. But that's
on.
What I mean. But that the leaders could do something unilaterally, and I don't understand that.
I don't fully understand that either. But, you know, I think Bob does have a point about the bigger issue, and I would take that even further. I think that we need to have a debate in this country about what kind of government we want to pay for. Because the reality is that if we want the level of services that we get from government right now, we're all going to have to pay a lot more. And I think that to be honest with you, like anybody else, I have my own ideas about what I think is appropriate. But I think the bigger issue is it has to be a question of what it is that we're willing to pay for in this country. Because we cannot continue having the level of services that we get right now without paying a whole lot more. I think that we probably should
level of
have
services, entitlements, foreign adventurism,
right.
Wars,
and
defense spending.
I do think that there needs to be more revenue, but I think that government needs to be doing a whole lot less if we want this to be sustainable.
You know, it's interesting how issues like what happened last Friday really do push the bigger discussions just right off the table. And, you know, so then just in terms of like the big news stories of the year, I mean, of course, the presidential election, this financial disaster, but then one incident, and I'm not minimizing it, but that one incident suddenly becomes the biggest story, the most critical issue of the day, and we turn all of our attention.
Because when you have an incident that
gun control,
so many, such a vast majority of people in the whole country, it's so personal to them that they can just feel it in their bones. I mean, that's rare.
And so it's almost like other things don't matter.
Right.
Though.
Yeah. Right. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, you wonder if something like this had happened. I mean, Hurricane Sandy happened in the middle of the presidential election. You wonder if something like this had happened. what it would have done, because there was absolutely, as we've discussed here, absolutely no discussion of guns or gun control.
You might have seen
anywhere.
A Democratic House if this had happened before. You know, I mean, I think that there is, I think that the NRA still controls, you know, an awful lot of power, wields a lot of influence over a number of both Democratic and Republican legislators. But I think that, you know, when you talk to average people, when you talk to moms out there, there is a real visceral feeling right now that we have to have a real debate about guns and what it means, well, and violence and video games and taking care of people who have mental illness, all of those things. But I think that you know, that sort of plays into a Democratic strength.
Yeah, but also in the background here, one statistic that's interesting, it's estimated, 35 to 50% of Americans own guns.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got that block of people there, and now look at the reaction.
Yeah, I mean, there are more guns than people.
Yeah, but I mean, is sort of going full circle here? Is Wayne LaPierre maybe right that there are more guns than people? Maybe we need more guns.
Well, that gets to this whole sort of gulf in this country. I mean, I don't know. I mean, to me, that's disturbing, but I think that I'm probably in the minority nationwide.
Well, I mean, and you're not, anytime soon, you're not going to see people knocking on doors taking people's guns from their homes. I mean, that's not going to happen. And if that day
ever
comes, you're going to have a revolt. So you've got to work within that reality, Charlie, like you just said.
You shouldn't be taking the kinds of weapons that were used last Friday out of people's homes?
Why would you take it out of a legal law-abiding? I mean, the problem with this whole thing is—
That would be
unconstitutional. I want to know how Mrs. Lanza stored her guns. If you've got a person—
we don't know that. We need to know.
And if you've got someone in your house clearly that has some kind of mental problem,
we don't know.
You
that
want
either.
To keep those guns safely stored.
There's a number of things that we don't know.
Yeah,
we have no idea how those were stored.
If you've got a kid with Asperger's, you are so desperate to be able to try and establish some connection with that kid, and it's so hard, you know. And so, you know, you hear all these stories
don't leave your guns laying around.
Well, no,
you certainly don't do that. Setting.
But I mean, in terms of using their trips to the range together, is, you know, I'm certainly not saying
that was a great idea. We don't know if that actually happened.
No, we don't.
That was an initial report. And that's the other problem, the frustrating thing. You read the initial report was it was her class.
It was her class. I know.
I mean, they misidentified his brother. There was so much misinformation.
There wasn't that much. I'm very defensive of the media. You know,
I'm not faulting the media, but
and by the way, most of that misinformation comes from law enforcement. So it's not like the media is digging it up and putting it out. They're getting, you know, kid was carrying his brother's ID. You know,
I agree. But you know, there's so much that frustrates me in this, the intrusive media down there. You know, wanting to interview kids who witnessed this, and the politicians who grandstand on an issue because they see an opening and a chance to get in the limelight on this, and without all of the facts being vetted and having some kind of normal discussion about it, and instead of all the chest beating and opportunism that the media engages in and politicians engage in, that part of this makes me a little bit frustrated.
On the other hand, you know, I am very defensive of the media. I saw some riveting interviews with families and the brothers and sisters of people, little children who have been killed. That, you know, sometimes it's very cathartic to talk about things.
But
they can always say no.
I don't want to watch that, though,
but
for some reason.
I found it
personally, I don't want to see that grief. I mean, let these people grieve. I don't want to have a window into that necessarily.
But I think it depends on whether they find it helpful for them to be able to come on and do that.
Yeah,
and if
maybe.
They do, we should listen to them.
And there's an audience for that. I mean, you know, a lot of the critics have said what you said, but there's a reason why it happens. The people want to talk. They want you to know about their child.
Absolutely.
There's that part of it, and then there is just, you know, being able to talk and, you know, express your feelings. And there are a lot of people who want to listen to it. You know, maybe it isn't you, but you can't blame the media for going after the story. I understand something else is happening here. What do we got? Another gunman, this time in central Pennsylvania. Blair County District Attorney Rich Consiglio says three people were shot Friday morning. That's this morning along a rural road in Frankstown Township. I'm not sure what the issue was here. Consiglio says two men and woman shot and killed. Male gunman also dead. Another situation of mass murder and a suicide. Two troopers were also injured but not shot. No names associated with this as yet. So, you know.
Boy, oh boy.
And by the way, this happens a lot more than I think is even reported in the press. You see these, you know what I mean? I mean, it's now you're
there were
going,
84 victims of mass gun shootings this year.
I know.
And we don't even know. We can't remember.
Because they're a blip on the radar screen. You know, and again, and that's, I think, you know, Bob, why I do think that this is sort of important to hear these stories and understand this stuff, because it is a blip. If this had not happened a week ago in Connecticut, that story would have been a blip. You wouldn't have just interrupted.
Wouldn't have known about it.
You wouldn't have known it. I'm just saying, and people need to understand that it's happening all the time. You know, when you drive in here, you know, and you see the billboard, you know, with how many kids are, you know, killed by gun violence.
John
and
Rosenthal,
that's what and this is why I do think that it's that we do have to look at gun policy and we need to understand it, because statistics show that having guns in the house does increase the potential for domestic violence, for accidents or whatever. And so having this debate, you know, what does this mean? You know, what does it mean in terms of mandating security, mandating safety, how people use these guns? You know, our Constitution guarantees the right to, you know, bear arms, but it doesn't give you an unfettered right, you know, in terms of how that impacts other people. And so
it's like
I think
free speech.
It's the debate does need to happen, and I hope that this kind of a story does you know, bring that back home to people.
Yeah, and the only reason why we're mentioning it is because it was a gun again. Because if it had been three people stabbed to death.
Well, someone also, and I don't know whether this is a true story, but they said a week ago the same thing happened in China, that 30 children
were
stabbed.
I heard that too. No.
But
somebody, the story is that somebody with a knife went to a school. But no one was hurt.
Oh, I thought and 30 kids were stabbed, but they
he
all...
And if he had had a gun, many people would have been dead.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. Maybe
is this another,
it could
is
be
this
urban
another,
myth,
the,
too.
Is this another the eagle lands and takes the baby up off the park lawn? So,
yeah.
You know, that kind of a thing.
Yeah, I don't know. But, you know, as I said, I hope this is one of those stories that does not go away. You know, you have... It's Christmas and... You know, we've got the fiscal thing looming and John Kerry, and we're going to get into our own, you know, Senate race again. So it's bound to abate, but I hope it's a story that doesn't go away. All right. This is Boston Public Radio. I'm Emily Rooney. I've been talking with State Senator Bob Hedlund, Charlie Chipio of Chipio Strategies, and former Massachusetts State Treasurer Shannon O'Brien. We'll be right back.